I'm moving further from sobriety. Every day I'm moving further from sobriety. Every day I'm moving further from sobriety. Further from sobriety. So sobriety. Every day I'm moving further from sobriety.
And now it's time for Homegrown, your only show dedicated to local art, with your hosts, David Von Strahm and Clinton Johnston. And now, here's Clinton and David.
Hello, Charlottesville. It is Sunday. It is 10 o'clock. That means it is Homegrown on 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. I am David Von Strahm, a.k.a. the Devious One. And the lascivious, loquacious Leslie M. Scott Jones is not with me. I got Clinton. Clinton Johnston.
You got me.
Clinton on the boards, who's usually, for the most part, silent, to my dismay. But, when mom's away, the boys will play. I guess that's what the phrase is.
I think so.
How you feeling?
I'm feeling good.
I'm feeling good too.
A little tired, a little on the low end. Maybe not quite as spry as I usually am.
Well, you know, when you're on stage, you know, disowning your son, you know, for multiple performances, you know, it takes a lot out of you.
It takes a toll.
Yeah. Jitney's had a good run so far. Two performances, two standing ovations. So we're two for two.
People enjoying it.
Pardon me. People are really feeling it, so I'm really blessed to be a part of that group and part of that performance. One of my best friends in the entire world saw it, and she was beside herself, and she said stunning at least seven times. So I am pleased to hear that, and that's why you do this stuff. You do this stuff to excite people, to it's an escape from the normalcy and the craziness that's going on in our town, and in our country for that matter. So I'm just happy to be a part of it. I'm just happy to work with individuals that really care about the craft and really enjoy what they do and what they love. And I'm always down for working with Clinton again.
Yeah, I was about to say, I'm just happy to be on stage with you. I'm serious. I'm really glad that we actually get to share some stage. Is this the first time?
I think this is the first time.
It's the first time we actually have been able to share some stage time together.
Yeah, exactly. Because I've worked with you before, but I've never worked with you before, acting wise, on the stage. So that's new for me. That's what I enjoy. Yeah, got the birthday coming up. My birthday's on Wednesday. Yeah. I mean, it's nothing exciting. Once you get in your 30s, everything's downhill. It's just I'm gonna take a nap. And that's how I'm going to spend my birthday. But I don't know about you, but I get birthday blues.
Yeah.
Do you have that actually happen?
Stopped celebrating my birthday years and years and years ago. So frequently I forget that my birthday has passed.
When is your birthday? Just so I know for my edification.
See, that's one of the ways that I avoid that. I don't tell anybody on my birthday.
Damn it!
So,
I'll have to do some investigation. But no, it's kind of like my New Year's, and I'm like, oh, well, what did I do with my life? Oh, absolutely nothing. I'm just going to crawl under my blanket and go to bed. But no, this year I actually accomplished a lot. And did a lot of amazing work with amazing people. So, yeah.
You should feel proud. You had a heck of a year.
I did have a heck of a year. I had a year that felt like 4 years. So
yeah.
I'm like, what am I now? Like 56? Like this is insane. So much. But enough about us. There's so much to do. There's so much to cover on the show. So much to get into. So I'm gonna stop talking about myself, and we're just gonna pick up the show with
up the mic and roll into our first guest.
Exactly. Beryl Sola. She's a professor of art at the Piedmont Virginia Community College. She has a couple of galleries that are being shown, both in the north and the south side galleries, at the V.R.L. Dickinson Building in Piedmont Virginia Community College, which opens September 22nd. And I'm going to hold up the phones to the phone so we can hear what she's talking about on the live feed. How you doing, Beryl?
Hi, good morning. How are y'all?
Doing well. Thanks for being with us on the show.
So happy to be here.
Excellent. So you are professor of art at Piedmont Virginia Community College.
It's true. I'm a professor of art, and I'm the chair of the art department and the curator of the gallery. I'm like a super human being at PVCC.
That sounds like a lot to have going on.
It is. I'm really tired. I'm just going to get under the covers with you.
Sounds like my birthday plan, so that works out.
I'm not tired.
There you go. There you go. So what does it take to be the curator of the gallery?
What does it take to be?
Yeah.
Did you ask? Well, I sort of have the long vision for the gallery. I try to have a range of work that supports our courses. And we're a foundation program, which means we care about technique and we care about drawing and, you know, not abstracting, not doing. I don't want to start talking a bunch of art talk no one understands. But
no, do that. You go there.
God forbid we talk about art on an art show.
But just work that's meaningful for our students and that will push them further in their aesthetic efforts. That sounds real, right?
Good. Yeah, so that's okay. So that's a question I have, which is that immediately comes up, which is how much do you tailor what goes on in the gallery to support the lessons that you're teaching in your educational programs?
Well, it's a very broad subject, so I think everything is connected. And sometimes we'll do thematic shows, like during the last election cycle, or the first Obama election cycle, we did a show called Peace, Justice, and the American Way, and it was very political and very thematic, and some people adored it, and some people felt it was unfair that there needed to be, you know, equal representation of all views. But that's not what an art gallery does. You know, we're not. I mean, TV doesn't even do that. News doesn't even do that. But we don't either.
Yeah. And it's kind of disturbing for me that news doesn't do that anymore. And wasn't it? And speaking of Obama, wasn't it Obama that concretized that? There was the fairness doctrine. And wasn't it Obama who decided,
yeah,
okay, that's like we haven't really dealt with it in a while, but now I'm just officially putting the kibosh on it.
Yeah, I don't know where it, you know, how things ended, but I mean, in many ways, I'm certainly no political historian, but it just seems like it's been chipped away at for decades.
Yeah.
Well, I've kind of noticed that. Since the 90s, there's been kind of like this chipping away at the arts programs in the country. You know, I remember having the VEA and the NEA and like seeing buttons in like grade school and like collecting them and putting them on my book bag, and then all of a sudden not seeing them anymore. And just seeing just like, you know, a constant like erosion of the importance of arts in our schools to the point where like some private schools don't even have an arts program and things like that.
No, it's very true, and we see it at every level, from, you know, kindergarten through college, where art used to be a mainstay of any liberal arts education. And the reason for that is that in order to make art, you have to be extremely observant. Mm-hmm. You have to draw. You have to pay attention to every single tiny little nuance, and that applies, that translates to every career. You know, from medicine, do you want a doctor who doesn't notice the small stuff? Do you want a bookkeeper, an accountant who doesn't notice nuance? You know, everybody needs these skills, and that's why drawing and art was always a part of a traditional classical liberal arts education. And when we get rid of that, we get rid of all kinds of things, you know, attention to detail, relationship to our cultural heritage, the sort of high culture, making art a high culture thing rather than a thing for everybody.
Yeah.
Because all of fine arts, all of music, all of everything came from, you know, the people. It came from regular common folks, and more it's elevated so that it's not understandable, it's not relatable, you have to you know, take a class to understand what you're looking at. And I don't know how well that serves the culture. Maybe it does. I don't know.
Let me ask you this. I wonder if we as artists are really in danger with losing so many art programs, because it seems like the less exposure people have, the less people understand about art.
Yeah.
The less
yeah.
people can one yes. appreciate art.
Yes.
And thus the less people who the less people who are appreciating art, the less significant our art seems to be.
Yeah, I think that's true. And maybe it's always been true that you have to have a certain level of education and understanding to know what's going on. You know, I mean, we don't have a real historical understanding of art and the regular people. We only can see what's going on now. Everything else is filtered through historians, and, you know, maybe it's accurate, maybe it's not, but I think it's true. I teach an art appreciation class, and
God bless you. I said, bless you.
I like it. You know, I love it. But I make the kids go to the Virginia Museum of Fine Arts, and they are always resistant, and they're kind of pissed off about it. But almost 100% of them afterwards talk about what a revelation it was, and
mm-hmm.
how meaningful it was, and beautiful, and fun, and interesting. And it's like, yeah, man, art is your culture. Art is your history. Art is your visual history from the cavemen on. It's ours. It's not rich people's. It's ours.
So, so talk about them a little bit more, because I was about to get into that question. What is your role in PVCC, and exactly what are you doing to kind of like emphasize the importance of art and strengthen that kind of belief that art is life for the sake of brevity? What do you think is most important to like emphasize to your students about how important art is and the role that they need to play in order to like keep that thing going, that spark?
Well, we do a lot of things, and a big part of it, I think, is just a general inundation. Like, we have the classes, of course, and I encourage students always to take a studio class, because that, in academic world, it serves as a humanities requirement.
Mm-hmm.
And you can take a humanities class, which is a lecture class, and you get lectures and tests and that kind of thing, which is fine, but to make art, and you don't have to be good. I mean, nobody starts off good. We all start off as monkeys, you know, fooling around. But with instruction, with support, you can make art, and it's meaningful. And I think people want to make things. You look at all the, you know, from the Click and Clack brothers on Car Talk to Martha Stewart. It's pervasive in the culture that people want to make stuff, and they want to use their hands. So at a community college level, you don't have to be an art major. You just have to want to take a course, and you can. There's no restriction. And then maybe you pursue it, maybe you don't, but it has certainly enriched your life and opened up your eyes to what you can do.
Mm-hmm.
So I like it. And we have student art all over the college. We go nuts with that. And, you know, we show the movies once a month. We do as much cultural enrichment and immersion as we can.
One more question, and then we're going to pay some bills, and then we're going to come right back to you. But have you noticed any students that are just like, yeah, art's kind of BS and whatever, and have them bring work to you, and you're like, well, this is art. You know what I'm saying? And like, have you ever had people like have a revelation inside them that's like, wow, I actually am an artist. I'm not just, you know, an engineering major, or I'm not just, you know, doing, you know, this to, you know, get, you know, this BS grade in the class in my elective so I can get my major. Have you ever like brought any light to a person's like creative process and been like, you know, what you're doing is exactly art?
Yeah. Well, you know what? I think that is very common in every class that I teach in the class that my colleagues teach in art, a lot of people take, especially in art history and art appreciation class, they take it because they have to take some kind of humanities and it fits their schedule and they think it's BS.
Mm-hmm.
They don't, you know, they don't understand it. And through the process of the class, because they're, you know, they tell you what they're thinking, and if they're not saying it verbally, they're certainly saying it through their body language. And you know, they write papers, and often in papers, I try to, in my classes, have a section for what did you think? You know, mm-hmm. how did you feel about it? And a lot of art, I think a lot, not a lot, but some art is very disconnected from the culture, very disconnected. And this is my way of being kind by saying it's disconnected rather than saying it's a load of junk.
Mm-hmm.
but I agree. You know, I went to the Whitney Biennial this year in New York, and I didn't even want to go because last time I went, it was so depressing. And my husband said, "No, you need to go." Blah blah blah. And so we went. We paid our $50, and we saw. I mean, it was very depressing to me. It was very depressing. I thought the art was very disconnected from the culture, and there was no feel. As generally speaking, there was no feel for craft or technique or skill. Huh. It was so depressing. I wanted to, you know, drink, and I don't drink as a rule. But you know, when people say art's a load of crap, it can be. You know, it's like anything. There's good and bad.
Hmm. I want to talk more about that, but do we have to pay some bills?
We do have to pay some bills.
All right, so we're gonna do a drop. We'll be right back with Beryl Sola, professor of art at PVCC. This is Homegrown. Drop. 18 minutes past the hour. If you're just tuning in, this is Homegrown on 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. We are talking with Professor Beryl Sola at the PVCC.
That's the Piedmont Virginia Community College.
Emphasis on community, because yeah. That's what we're about. So, I was just interested in the phrase that you use, like how art doesn't really, or how some art doesn't necessarily have a technique or anything to it. I've always been an artist that never has really like followed the so-called rules of artwork.
Mm-hmm.
And this isn't necessary because I'm more of an actor, I'm more of a writer, I'm more of a poet and a uh-huh. musician, and I'm not really like trained in all of those aspects. I just kind of do it because I just need to express myself and get out my thoughts,
right.
or do it in some way, shape,
right.
or form. So I'm just curious to know like how you validate art in the sense of how it's constructed as a professor.
Well, I think, you know, art is like all of art, music, performance, it's very big. It has a huge range. And there are people, I personally like what's called outsider art, which is art, sounds like the kind of thing you're interested in, where you're not coming from an academic background, you're coming more from an emotional, intuitive background.
Mm-hmm.
And one of my favorite artists is Howard Finster, who's a very active Christian minister, and he tells this great story that he got him, you know, he got a message from God, and God told him to paint sacred art, and he said, here's my Howard Finster impersonation. I can't paint art. I can't do that. And God said, how do you know unless you try? Because God's got a southern accent down in Georgia. And so he
I've often wondered about God's accent
art.
In Georgia.
Yeah. We know the devil went down to Georgia. You know that, right?
And, well, as musicians, you know, he painted a cover for Talking Heads album. I can't remember the name of it, but it's David Byrne as Atlas holding the world. And he also painted a cover for REM, and REM were big advocates of his work. But I love his work. I have an original piece in my house. I have many of his prints. I love his work because he was not that I'm not a religious person by any stretch of the imagination, but that his intention is so deep and pure and real, and aesthetically, I just like the work. You know, the colors are fun. His work is totally naive and charming. And, you know, you relate to it immediately. And, you know, have I ever read the scripture? You always paint scripture on his work. I have not. I'm not. I mean, that's not what draws me to it. What draws me to it is his intense passion for the image and for reaching out and teaching. And, you know, what his message is his business. I just like his thunder, you know, his power, his visuals. So I think there's room for everything, you know, absolutely room for everything, and that art should ideally come from that innermost part of you that has something to say, even if what you have to say is the world is beautiful or the world is terrible. It's mm-hmm. still that impulse mm-hmm. to share your ideas. I love that. I think that makes us human.
Cool. So let's use that to segue into talking about the art that's coming up in these exhibits that you're about to open. So if people don't know, V. Earl Dickinson Building, I keep wanting to call it the Dickerson Building. I don't know why. The V. Earl Dickinson.
We always have Lorenzo Dickerson on the show.
And is that why?
And he's amazing.
I think I misread it early on, and then it just stuck in my head. Anyway, so in the V. Earl Dickinson Building. The main building is circular, and there are two galleries on either side, and you treat them as two different galleries, as the North Gallery and the South Gallery. You've got exhibits opening in both. Let's talk about them. Let's start with Lisa Parker Hyatt in the North. Am I right?
Yes.
Speaking of colors.
Yes, absolutely. And you want to talk about Lisa first?
Yeah.
All right. So Lisa Parker Hyatt is a painter. She's based in Washington, D.C., and she paints figurative work, which means, you know, you understand what she's painting. It's what it looks like is what it is. And she is an excellent painter. She can render objects almost photographically, but still making it emotional and interesting. She has an insane use of color, just rich, lush, beautiful. It's like she's figured out the core of life and translated it. Mm-hmm. And she's doing these big paintings, huge paintings, that have a lot of them are floral, but embedded maybe inside the vase or nearby is some sort of an odd object. Wonder Woman, she does a lot of Wonder Woman imagery, alligators, army men, all kinds of stuff. She brings this, I think, this wonderful mix of this kind of lush, beautiful life with everyday life by placing these everyday objects in direct relationship to these big vases of roses or these big, delicious spaces. So she's one of my favorite painters, contemporary painters, and I'm so excited that she's showing in the gallery.
Yeah, we're looking at, we've got some images of her up that we're looking at online. And does she, her line is so crisp. I mean, are all these illustrated? Does she mix photography with illustration, or is she just that photorealistic with her?
She always starts with, some painters paint from still life. Some painters paint from photographs. She does both. She also does. She does mainly painting and drawing, but she also does some kind of surrealistic Photoshop pieces that are very fun. But she brings that same kind of hardcore, technical, delicious aesthetic to all media. Whatever she touches, she controls it. She's a dominator. She's a monster.
So the name of the show is Fish Out of Water. Can you tell us what the theme of the show is? Or,
well, it's that juxtaposition of, you know, the beautiful, the elegant, the lush, and the everyday, and that idea that, you know, it seems like using these common objects in her paintings makes no sense, but culturally, visually, we're all, you know, we're straddling two worlds, three worlds sometimes, where we're, you know, like when I'm in the classroom, I am an academic. I'm supportive of students. I'm also straddled the world of being an artist, making art. I'm a family person, very entrenched in my family.
Right.
So, you know, we're a lot of things to a lot of people, and in some places it feels like, you know, we don't belong there, but, you know, actually we belong everywhere.
Mm-hmm. Oh, rock on. I like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right, so moving to the South Gallery, you've got a joint exhibition, is that right?
Yes, it's a small group exhibition, and that's what I usually like to do is bring artists together either in a thematic way, and sometimes that's what happens, and sometimes they're very different. And in this case, we have four artists who are very different, and but they're all dealing with information, and that thus the name metadata, so information about information. And I think that's pretty much what art is. It's information, about what we see, what we think, what we do, how we live.
Oh, I really like that definition for art.
Right?
Yeah.
I'm full of brainy goodness. The first artist on the card, Laura Parsons, does... She has a background as a writer, but also as a visual artist. And she's been showing at Piedmont for many years. She's been in Let There Be Light. She's been in Yard Dream. She's been in gallery shows. And she typically does mixed media found object work, large scale, and very intricate, thoughtful, sometimes autobiographical, sometimes... I would say she mainly works, you know, talks about her own life, but in a very universal way. Like right now, she's moved, she's dealt with the loss of a parent, mm-hmm. and all of that is going to be in her work, and it's kind of a very common experience. Either we have experienced or we will experience, and it's very moving and just a wonderful visual sense she's got it going on.
Yeah, I'm so excited to see her latest stuff.
Yeah, I love her work. The next artist is Mara Spraskin, and Mara does two kinds of work. She does sort of collage, semi-abstract work, bringing image off the surface, but the work she's doing in our show are these small contour drawings of her family life. And I first started to see her work on Facebook. She would do these, she was a new mother, and she would do these very simple line drawings of her baby son. And they were so compelling. They were beautiful. And she would post them, like, certainly once a week. And I loved them, and I would look forward to seeing them. And they weren't anything she ever showed. It was just like an exercise to keep her, you know, to keep her wits about her as she was moving through being a young mother and still, you know, having her hand in the art world. Mm-hmm. And I invited her to show these drawings in the gallery, and she brought in 104 drawings.
Holy
That's
smokes.
How fast she whips these out. And they're just the most charming, intimate, personal, lovely, loving contour drawings. I love them, and I can't wait to share them with the community, because I think she sees them as sort of, you know, not her real work, but to me, they're her real work. They're just so dear. I love them. I love them. That's Mara.
So Laura is in Lexington now. Is Mara local?
Yeah, Mara's local.
Okay.
Yeah, Laura is in Lexington, and Mara is local. And the next artist, Elle Steger, is... She is kind of sort of local. She's regional. And she does these, she's very much an outdoors person. And her paintings reference that. They reference the natural world in central Virginia, the rivers, the landscape. And they're just, she has a subdued, I think it's a subdued palette. And very, very warm, very meaningful. I mean, anyone from central Virginia who has been in the natural world will just, you know, fall into these paintings. They're just full of the lushness of our landscape, and very loving, you know, very much about the love of this landscape. And then the final artist is James Yates, and James Yates is he's the curator for Let There Be Light, our big annual light-based art show.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And right, so he's a wonderful artist, and his work in this show, he tends to be political, social commentary kind of an artist, and that's his work. He's doing four or five pieces that directly engage the audience. In one piece, he's got, you remember back in elementary school, we would do these scratch paintings where we would use crayons and then color it with paint and then scratch an image and the colors would come through.
Uh-huh.
It's like a classic elementary school.
I went to Louisa County. I never did anything. that sounds super cool though.
Yeah. Well, he's brought that very naive technique into a very large scale piece dealing with our personal ecological responsibility, our personal commitment to support the climate accord.
Huh.
So it's a nice juxtaposition where, you know, you actually scratch into this big image that I won't say what it is, but it will be revealed as people scratch in. You know, what you're going to do, what you're going to commit to. So we expect our government, ha ha ha, to work on climate change, but we also have to be personally responsible. So his work deals with your direct, intimate relationship to the larger world, personal world, the aesthetic world. So his work is often, I won't call it fun, it's always looking at.
Oh, yep, we're sort of losing Beryl.
Did we lose her? I think she went through a tunnel.
I think she went through a tunnel. All right, well.
Do you hear me?
Oh, yes, yes, she's back. She's back.
Oh, sorry.
No worries.
What happened?
we had a little glitch, but that's okay, because the time has flown.
So if you want to check all the stuff out, it's going to be at the V.R.L. Dickinson Building, North Gallery and South Gallery, opening September 22nd and running until, question mark?
Yes, it opens 5 to 7, and I will say we have the best opening gallery food of any gallery in Virginia.
Oh, look at Beryl.
Sold.
Puffing out her chest. Well, I'm gonna have to see about that. Beryl Sola, thank you so much, Dr. Beryl Sola, for coming out.
Absolutely.
Speaking out and being a part of the show. We hope to have you back very soon.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Yay.
So
thank you. Thank you.
All right.
Cool. So I'm gonna pass this phone over to Clinton and I'm gonna do a few announcements. Are we gonna do a drop and come back or
Let's go into things coming up.
Sure. Here are some of the artistic events happening this week now through November 26th. The American Shakespeare Center's summer fall season featuring Much Ado About Nothing, Love's Labor's Lost, Henry VI, Part 3 by Shakespeare and the Modern Musical, Peter and the Starcatcher, all at the Blackfriars Playhouse in Stanton. And now through September 23rd, PEP, the Performers Exchange Project continues their performance that they're continually developing called The Convolution of Pip and Twig at Live Arts. And this is the last day for the Rocky Horror Show at Shannon Arts in Stanton. So get your time warp on and go and check that out. Currently running now through September 24th, August Wilson's Jitney. Oh my God, Jitney's out? Jitney's out? Oh my God, I need to see that at the Jefferson School African American Heritage Center. I hear it's really, really good actually. Tomorrow, Charlottesville Writer House instructor Michael Cordell starts a 6-week course, The Fundamentals of Screenwriting. September 29th, instructor John Most begins an 8-week advanced poetry seminar on Tuesday evenings at the Charlottesville Writer House. Previous workshop experience is a requirement. You, what? Like, alright, alright, I guess you gotta do the most for John Most. September 19th, instructor Jay Kaufman begins an 8-week seminar on the essential elements of nonfiction on Tuesday evenings at the Charlottesville Writer House. And September 20th, instructor Hannah Barnaby begins an 8-week seminar on Wednesday evenings at the Charlottesville Writer House on writing children's picture books. Also on September 20th, instructor Helen Chandler begins an 8-week daytime seminar on Wednesdays at the Charlottesville Writer House on writing nonfiction. September 21st is the Eyes on Art Eyes on Art Tour, which engages people with Alzheimer's disease in meaningful discussions about art at UVA's Fralin Art Museum. And again on the 21st, UVA's Fralin Art Museum, wow, welcomes their Mellon Indigenous Arts Visiting Fellow Mohawk Tribe member, singer-songwriter Elizabeth Hill. Also on the 21st, Big Blue Door, Improv Night at Seville Coffee. September 23rd, check out Family Art Day at Second Street Galleries featuring hands-on art for making for all ages. And for your music options this week, it's today. Today! So many things going on today. Okay, one guitar, one violin, two great performers. It's Duo Bohème giving you a gypsy jazz brunch at Brasserie Saison at 12:30. Also today, sing songs of inspiration and restoration to build connection and community at Seville Sings at the Front Porch Roots Music School. Also today, Michael Coleman at Stinson Vineyards at 2. Also today, spicy vintage jazz from Zuzu's Hot 5 at Albemarle Cider Works at 2:30. And also today, Charlottesville Chamber Music Festival continues with 10 visiting performers showcasing vocal and instrumental pieces by late romantic composers at Old Cabell Hall. It is a jam-packed, music-filled Sunday in Seville. Get your jam on. September 19th, Bob Huntington and then Travis Elliott Fellini's. September 20th, open mic at Dirty Nelly's. September 21st, Charlottesville's Chamber Music Festival continues with award-winning violinist Alexei Kenny. I think you have to be Russian to be an award-winning violinist. And three festival musicians play Beethoven, Korngold, and Dvorak. September 22nd, Willie D. E. Band at Glasshouse Winery. Also on the 22nd, David Tewksbury at Blue Mountain Barrel House, Bob Bonetta, and then Adrian Duke at Fellini's, and Eli Cook at Dirty Nelly's. September 23rd, oh my God, check out all this. Gina Sobel at Wegmans Pub, Mojo Pie at Albemarle Cider Works, Fall Kickoff Day Party with DJ B-Eazy and V.A. Dow, Man on a Horse at the Batesville Market, and then Gabriel Planas, and then Luchador at Fellini's. Oh my God, the 23rd is jam-packed. Every Friday morning, West African Drum Circle at the Front Porch Roots Music School. Every Monday, Bluegrass Jam at the Front Porch Roots Music School. Every Monday, C-Foot, Charlottesville's Friends of Old Time Music. Weekly open jam at Thomas Jefferson Memorial Unitarian Church. Every Tuesday, traditional Irish session at the Tin Whistle Irish Pub. Every Wednesday, open mic night at Pro Renata Farm Brewery. Open mic night at Holly Deli's and pub hosted by Josh Mayo. Jazz Collective Number 9 at Fellini's Number 9. Bachata Fusion and at the Ante Room, presented by the Charlottesville Salsa Club. And the Mike Rosensky and Jeff Decker Quartet at Miller's. And Every Thursday. John Dirth at Quintet at Miller's. We're going to do a drop. We're going to pay some bills. This is Homegrown. Drop!
Hi, this is Nim Pedersen, and you are listening to Homegrown, a show of local art and culture here in Charlottesville on 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville.
Boom, 39 minutes past the hour. Thanks for being here. Thanks for not being there.
Where y'all been?
Stay tuned after the show for the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call with your host, Sean McCord. Their guest is Rebecca Kendall from Region 10, talking about healing following the Unite the Right rally. But before we get that, we're going to rally ourselves. Somewhat of a segue.
how do you feel being segued from Unite the Right Rally? And speaking of white supremacy, we have Edward Work White in his white polo t-shirt.
Speaking of emotional and social drama and trauma.
Oh dear. This is not the day to wear a white polo. you know that they've killed the white polo for white people. You know that,
right? I totally forgot.
It's all good. No, we have Edward Work White.
One of the friends of our show.
Dear, lovely friend. For numbers of years. A fantastic performer. the director of Four County Players or just the director of the show coming
just,
on it?
Just director of the show. But
it seems like you're a director of Four County Players because you're always there.
Yeah, I'm on the board. My partner Gary's the production manager. I do the marketing, so we kind of live there.
That's
sleep on cots in the prop room. It'll popcorn off the floor.
That is beautiful.
Yeah.
So,
dude, if you're on the board, you should make them give you like the fresh popcorn.
Right, exactly. You know, you think.
Do the perks. Work the perks.
I know. I got to try harder.
He's directing The Best of Barbersville, a 45th anniversary musical review going on September 22nd, 23rd,
which
and 24th.
Which anniversary is that again, David?
That is the 45th anniversary. Wow. It's old.
I'm still here.
Not you. Like, Four County Players is super old. Really? Like, so is Four County Players, is that the oldest theater within the district?
Yeah. Central Virginia's longest running community theater.
That's amazing. Boom. That's amazing. Yeah. So, Best of Barbersville, 45th. All right. So, I got to ask.
Sure.
How did you compile this Best of Barbersville?
Yeah,
did
that's
you,
the question.
Yeah, like how did you go through all of the shows that have gone on in Four County? Be like
in 45 years,
exactly, and be like, right. Okay, we need to have this again. Did you contact any of the original people who did these pieces and be like, yo, we want to do this again, come through, help us out? I know you just moved to like New York and you're making like tons of money, but right. We
want to come back to Barbersville.
Yeah, and do a show for a weekend. It shouldn't be that bad. So yeah, talk about the process, like how you figured this out.
Sure. So we have done one of these anniversary reviews sort of every 5 years. Last mm-hmm. being 40 and Fabulous, they did 35. I think was the little theater that could. So there's been kind of a theme each year.
This is 45. And still alive. That's
there
what you're
go, yeah.
All right.
And Best of Barbersville, we actually pulled back. So the 10th anniversary was Best of Barbersville back in the days when Fran Smith, who we love, was running Four County, and Bill Thomas and Lillian Morris and all those great people. So there was Best of Barbersville for the 10th anniversary, and I think they brought it back maybe the 20th, Best of Barbersville 2, and so we brought the name back. Thought it was fun. So it was sort of a mix of things. So part of it was kind of looking back at what had been covered in sort of the more recent years. What were some things that we could do that, you know, have happened in the last 5 years, as well as what's some of the original stuff. And what's a good mix? And then what's... Also finding a lot of stuff that really kind of highlighted the performers that we had, you know, mm-hmm. their voices as well. We did an open call. We definitely did a lot of outreach to folks who've been involved. And kind of the fun thing that happened is we have some folks who have been a part of the theater for many years, like Elaine Brown, who was sort of one of the founding folks. She's in the show, but then we also have two brand new cast members who walked into Four County for the first time.
Oh, wow.
One young lady who just moved here, so it's kind of been cool to, like, bring her into the family
mm-hmm.
and have this be her first show and meet some of these great people.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's been kind of a great mix of familiar and new faces as well. I'd say it's hard because it's 45 years worth. And this is just the musicals, so we've also done all the dramas and Shakespeare and comedies and all of that. But even just picking out 45 years of musicals, it's...
Yeah,
it's a lot. We'd be there a lot. It'd be a long time.
Me and Clinton are actually writing a musical piece for Othello that we did in Four County.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Put out the light.
Back in black.
Dun, dun.
I think that's what it was.
Desdemona. You know she's lying. You know she's lying.
All right, we're adding that in. That's good.
Handkerchief in a pocket. No, sorry. for all you with all offense. Talk about that. How people I don't want to say intergenerational, but people that have been just so ingrained with the Four County family and new people that are just like coming in. Talk about that contrast and how people are getting adjusted to it. Because I know my first show at Four County, I just kind of felt like, where is this place? Who are these people? But it was really inclusive towards the end, and I really appreciated it. So talk about that.
Yeah, well, I got lost my first time going to Four County. I took a ride it pretty quickly.
As we all.
Okay. So no. It's been great. And what's been really fun is I think seeing that mixing of sort of the generations. I mean, as you said, I think the red doors are always open to anyone who finds their way to Barbersville, which is great. So I think especially seeing, you know, the folks who have been involved for so long, like seeing the theater change, I think, in a positive way as well. They have great memories of the theater, but just even being able to share those stories of everything from times when, I mean, I say, you know, well, gosh, we're still in a political mess, but times when things were different in Barbersville, like that the theater was not always a welcome spot as far as the community was concerned.
Right.
Sometimes
right.
you think people get an idea of a community theater and they think, oh, what's all the bad stuff that's going on in there? Is that the place where all just the artsy folks are getting together and causing trouble to, you know, what was it like to not have a paved parking lot, to have old seats, to not have dressing rooms, you know, to not even have a back deck, all those sorts of things.
Mm-hmm.
So it's always sort of that's like, well, back in my day, you know, you think things are tough now.
Back in my day, we didn't have lights on the stage, but that's okay. The right, picketers outside with the torches were able to light the
show. We did it all by candlelight and all that. So, you know, to just even always the fresh energy, because we're always wanting to welcome fresh ideas and fresh perspectives and, you know, how can we sort of change and grow and evolve and adapt. So I think it's been kind of a great give and take both ways.
Now, if you... If anybody is listening to this who hasn't been to Fort County, that place is big, it is long, it is deep. So you got to have some pipes to really get that to really get your music out and have that stuff project. Sure. Talk about that when you were doing the casting, like who's going to be able to like really carry the tones for these pieces and for this show. So yeah, talk about A, the pieces that you're doing without like giving too much of the show away, and B, the people that you've selected in order to like carry these tasks out.
Yeah. Well, first off, casting wise, like I said, we did do an open call. You had everybody come sing a nice solo. We asked, you know, you didn't have to. We said if you could sing something from our last 45 years of shows, we put kind of the archives out there on our website so folks could kind of look and pick, which covers a ton. Nice. I mean, most people's audition songs fall somewhere in there unless you're singing something from Wicked, which we haven't done or anything like that. But yeah, I mean, that's a big part. Exactly, not yet. So a big part
it's
of
coming.
That. Yeah, and with the musical review, I mean, so much of it's music. You know, a lot of times it's like, I mean, you really kind of get the folks who... you know, really can kind of carry that and love to sing, because I think a lot of times a lot of folks, you know, they love to do musicals, but they're like, yeah, I want to be in the ensemble, and maybe I'll kind of hide in there as a townsperson and dance a little bit. But for a musical review, you know, we really wanted everybody to get a chance to do some solos, some duets. There's not really anywhere to hide
right.
in a musical review, because that's kind of what it's all about. And how do you tell a story, you know, for a couple hours through music, and kind of how do you tell the evolution of an organization, you know, musically? And part of that, too, is I'm not a fan of reviews that are just like, you sing a song and then you're like, in 1974, we did right. MAME. Here's a song from MAME. Like, you know, and it's kind of like...
Yeah. Well, jump in on that, because that's a question that I wanted to ask, which is sometimes... people can look down on musical reviews because
sure, it feels like show choir.
Exactly. So
David.
How do you have the artistry in a musical? Like, what is the artistry of the musical review? How do you make
sure.
it work?
Sure. So that's something that I'm kind of passionate about, because I, you know, love music, but I feel like when you do that, I feel like it sucks the energy out. I feel like it's like, we're there, and then we're back down. Like, all of a sudden somebody appears. It's like the wings at Fort County. It's like you put somebody out on the wing, and then they appear in a tuxedo and are like, and then this happened.
What, the narrator from Our Town is not going to lead us through
the entire show? So that was kind of one of my big things. I was like, if I'm going to do this, we're not going to do that. I had a little bit of practice with it. We did a part of our Songs in the Cellar series, which is downstairs in the Black Box.
That's right.
We did Backwards Broadway a few seasons ago, and they let me direct it and choreograph it, where men sang songs that were written for women and vice versa.
Nice.
And for that, really wanted to find a through line that sort of avoided the, like, the narration and avoided the whatever. And that, we could learn sort of the music we had and realized that a lot of the songs kind of fell in somewhere in the relationship dynamic. So we sort of set the space up kind of like a nightclub. You know, there was a bar, mm-hmm. and it was sort of like how folks related to each other. So everything from dating to marriage to having children to relationships falling apart through the evening, which I kind of liked. And so for this, we were like, what is the through line with this? And for us, we're like, okay, it's 45 years. We're celebrating an organization. Like, what if it's a party? Like, what if it's all of these friends who have come together for an evening, sort of folly style, like, you know, like, not that the organization is crumbling, but sort of the, like, coming back to remember a place, and what are their relationships with the organization, you know, what is it like to meet a new group of people, and how do you sort of celebrate something together? So sort of the evening is treated kind of like as if folks were coming together to celebrate.
We have to go to a commercial, sure. But while we do that, I'm going to talk to you about my one-man show where I just do only Alanis Morissette and Janet Jackson songs.
Perfect.
So maybe we can, like, make that into something.
Yeah, and I'm going to go change my shirt. So.
This is Homegrown. Drop!
This is Mary Gordon Hall. You're listening to Homegrown, your show about local art. 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. And what a secret this is.
Hey, Alex, I need your help. Marcia and I are celebrating. I know you go to Market Street Wine Shops and was wondering if you have any recommendations.
You bet, Mike. You should both go to one of their tastings.
Sounds good. We work downtown but live on Rio. Don't they have two locations?
Yes, they do. 311 East Market Street, downtown or on 29 North in Ryabanna Place. Directions and tasting schedules are at marketstreetwine.com. I was just in last week and their staff really know their stuff.
Thanks, Alex. I'll tell Marcia. What's their phone number?
It's 434-979-1. Wine downtown and 964 Wine uptown. That's Market Street Wine Shop, supporting this station.
51 minutes past the hour. If you're just tuning in, you're missing the hell of a Homegrown on 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. We're talking with Edward Warwick White, director of The Best of Barbersville, 45 and still alive, an anniversary musical review running to September 22nd, 23rd, and 24th.
At so, Four County Players. In a world where community theater can last, one man, one show, 45 years.
Sunday.
Actually, it's Friday.
Yeah. Friday.
There you go. Close enough. Oh, man. So I was talking to Alex Citron. Back in the Play On days, because Play On used to do a bunch of reviews.
Yeah,
And it was interesting talking to him because I went where I frequently go, which is the question of rights. It's like how does this actually work? And he said, well, you know, it's actually interesting. In order to get the rights to do all these different songs from all these different places, there were restrictions that were placed on them in terms of how much of a story that you could build and how much of and what you could do. Are you running into that at all?
No, so we pay, I wish Gary were here, there's a certain licensing that we pay on a yearly basis that basically gives us the rights to music from shows for reviews. Like, the opposite from when we were doing, like, just Company. We can't just put on that show without the rights to Company, but we can do songs from Company. That being said, I think part of it is it has to be somewhat like minimal, like not enough that you build an entire show. Like, we've written our own musical and taken your music, but sort of treating the same amount of time you would as sort of interludes as their own kind of separate, you know, scenes and intros and that sort of thing. So it's a fine line, but I mean, nothing you would like put out on the street that's like, you know, here's a brand new show and it features all the song other people wrote, and that book by all that. So yeah, it's nothing like that.
You're not worried about a guy with some heavy Brooklyn accent coming in with the briefcase and being
hopefully
like,
not.
Yeah. Okay,
yeah. You never know.
We would like to talk to you about your narrative and music choices.
Shut it down.
Wrap it up.
Yeah. That was it. That was the end of Four County on that day.
So what do you? I ask everybody this when you know you're going to a show. What do you hope that people get out of it? What do you hope that people feel and see about the show? And you know, is it for kids? I mean, is it something that you know you just want to like? Yeah, what do you want people to get out of it?
Yeah, I think it's for everyone. I think with the anniversary review, since we're sort of celebrating the theater, it's also that fine line of how do you do something that is celebratory for the folks who have been involved but doesn't exclude the folks who are new? Like, yeah. I want people to come to something and feel like they missed the party or they weren't invited or, they're like, I don't get it or I don't get the jokes.
Yeah.
Or,
yeah.
So really not having it dig so deep that if somebody were to wander in for the first time, they weren't like, that was a really great evening of music and I'm excited about this place, you know, and it's cool what you've done, but I can't wait to see what you're doing next. So that's sort of what I care about, was that it was a way that, you know, it pulled at the heartstrings of the folks that know the organization and cared about it, but at the same time, you could walk in off the street and be like, that was great. Like, these people were really cool and love what they did and that sort of thing as well. So,
right on.
Dang it.
You have... Yeah, you'll have a lovely, fantastic evening, and then next play will be The Crucible.
Yeah, where, yeah, let's talk about what you're doing next. Yeah.
Not a musical.
Not fun at all.
Although David and I could write that musical for you.
Yeah, we can call it Goody Goody.
John Proctor!
Crush her with a rock!
No, I had a moment, I was talking to Gary about it, and it was like, and I was talking about like The Crucible and so on, and he was like, he's like, you realize you're talking about The Scarlet Letter? And I was like, clearly the public school system has failed me. So I had to go back and look at everything.
Again,
like,
Louisa County.
I know, he's like, no, that's Ethan Frome. And I was like, all right, never mind, I quit. I was like, too many like Puritan, like, you know, little shows. But yeah, we're excited to be
on
the
show. It's like, how the hell did I get on our show? Yeah. Not know like 10% about
and
all
not to turn the
art.
Tables, but I saw a great show last night. Jitney, with these two talented gents.
Oh, yeah, right? I hear that.
That's going on. Yeah. You have a matinee today, right?
We do.
Yes.
I would be tired. It's a very physical show.
It's up there. Yeah, it's up it there. I'm still trying to catch sleep, but
it was great.
It's all worth it. Thank you so much.
You should go see it.
Yes.
And Best of Barbersville.
Yes.
See
yes.
all the things.
Yes. See all the things.
See everything.
Get a twofer in if
there
you can.
There
like,
you
go one night and go the Perfect. Next night. Yeah. And just
in fact,
yeah.
that should be the. I think that should be the slogan of Homegrown. Homegrown. Mm-hmm. See all the things.
There you go.
See everything.
You have to read all the things.
Do see all everything.
Exactly.
Hashtag Charlottesville.
There you go.
In a good way. Yep. yeah. I guess that's pretty much it.
Edward, thank you so much for coming on the show again.
Anytime.
Yes. And you'll be back hopefully with Gary. And then y'all can talk shop. And then be cute and lovely and warm my heart. That's what's up. Stay tuned for the show next. Sunday morning wake-up call with your host, Sean McCord. Their guest is Rebecca Kendall from Region 10, talking about healing following the Unite the Right rally. And we'd like to thank our guests, Beryl Sola, Edward Work White, Clinton, love you.
Love you too,
as
David.
As always. Love doing work with you. We got another show, and then we take a little break, and then we pick it up next weekend. So if you haven't got your Jitney tickets, get them. I don't want to hear no BS. I want to be like, yo, D, you know, hook me up at the door. You know what I'm saying? I got, you know, I ain't got that money right now, but, you know, just see what you can do for it. No. Order your tickets.
No.
Get them now, and don't talk to me about it. I wanted to see it, but I couldn't because, no, you didn't. A dream without action is a wish. And that's it. Is that what it is?
That was. I don't know what that. I don't know what that is. But that was intense.
That was intense and prophetic. That's as prophetic as I get. All right. So we're gonna turn it over. We love you guys. See you next week. This is Homegrown.
Woo.
People not like you, not like me. Please, can't we be an average family? One normal night. That's all I want. That's all I need from you. One normal house. A mouse to feed a plant or two. You must admit we're not what people call laid back. So can't we muse a bit and lose the basic black? Whoa, normal night with normal people on their way. Just one normal night. What do you say? One normal night to be polite, to do the least you can.
One normal eve.
Can you achieve a kind of common man? You have to swear to me, yes, promise to the core. It's almost 6 o'clock, they're almost at the door. On all the Adam's ancestors who've ever walked or right. One normal night.
You've been listening to Homegrown on 94.7 WPVC LP Charlottesville. You can contact the show on Facebook by searching Homegrown Charlottesville. Be sure to tune in again next Sunday at 10 for Homegrown, only on 94.7, the progressive voice of Charlottesville.